Welcome, everybody. I'm Bill Newell, and joined by Joe Spina and Paul Crowley and Avram Lapidus, all from the Frankly Speaking team. And we're doing this thing on msonewsports.com as well as Lynn Community TV, which would be Frankly Speaking, live Thursday at 5. However, it won't be live Thursday at 5. It'll be pre-recorded, and just letting folks know we're recording this on Tuesday. And so we're on both the msonewsports.com website and, of course, Lynn TV with the Frankly Speaking team. And so let's say hi to everybody. Joe, welcome.
Oh, thanks. Nice to hear from you again.
All right. So we're on the cell phones. Paul, welcome. Good to talk with you.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to talking about all the elements of coronavirus as we start to move into the next phase of life in America.
And Avram Lapidus. Avram, welcome back.
Thank you very much. It's very nice to be here, and I wish everybody a healthy, happy holiday, and stay safe and well with your families, please.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, let's begin with, let's start local, and then we'll branch out the tentacles of a conversation here. But Joe, a Monroe Street construction project in Lynn, which would be basically almost a high-rise for Lynn, a high-rise apartment building construction project, was halted. I guess there were a number of protests and so on this week, or in the last several weeks, about workers having to work there. But what can you share with us on that, and what are your and everyone can weigh in after that?
Well, actually, I think, Paul, you're more up to date on it than I. I just don't understand. It's been going on for a while, and they're protesting. The union organized it, and they're talking about social distancing, and they're congregating there, so it's kind of a funny scene.
can I just tell you that Rahm Emanuel's quote, "Never let a good crisis go to waste," is never more applicable than it is here. The real
on the Monroe Street, yeah.
Right. The real reason that they're striking or trying to wreak havoc down there is because they're upset that there's no affordable housing in the building. And as long as there's no affordable housing in the building, they are going to try to ruin this guy's life. Now think about it. I was reading in the paper yesterday that it's probably unlikely, but with the way things have been going the last couple of months in this country, who knows? The fact is that when you shut down a project, the longer it shuts down, the closer you come to default, the closer the banks get to freaking out about whether you're going to have the ability to complete the project, to pay and all that stuff. And that's when things start to unwind. What those brown shirts or those Bernie bros or whatever you want to call them down there, what they're trying to do is kill the project. Nothing else. That's all they're trying to do is kill the project.
Well, let me intercede for one moment. I always find it fascinating to define the definition of affordable housing. Well, how do you define affordable housing? Affordable housing means giving someone who's poor a place to live.
At whose expense?
At our expense. Who else is thinking expense? At the same time, if a man is out to build a complex, has raised his own money, he should be the one to decide who's there and who's not there.
Well, let me ask this, Paul and Bill and the rest of you. The protests also had to do with the fact that in order to get the project there, there was an incentive. So what they did was that they waived the taxes somewhat. They discounted it in order to attract the developer, to make it economically feasible. I thought that's a wise idea. You know, 50% of something is better than 0% of nothing, right? And they're actually protesting about that which is time on it. If you want development, you got to give a little. Is that right, Paul? Do you remember that when you were on the council?
Yeah, you know, and incremental tax incentives such as these.
Is that a good thing?
They are. They're kind of a, you know, how do you describe it? You know, it's not what you want, but if that's what it takes to make things happen, it's what you do. But the problem is that the crazies that are down there making all the noise that they're making spout off that this is nothing more than welfare to rich people.
Let me ask this.
You know,
I understand that part, but here is what the developer did. he has a nurse on site taking the temperature of all the employees. Is that correct?
Right, but like I said, Joe, that it has nothing to do with the coronavirus. It's an excuse.
I agree.
Okay,
but the point is... Go ahead.
Let me just say one thing. If a man goes out to buy a new suit barista, walks into a store, looks at the prices and says, I can't afford a suit, can he bring back his friends and protest that that man doesn't have a suit that he can afford?
Interesting analogy.
You can actually do it. I don't know what it'll get you, but yeah.
So the net bottom line is that Lynn is going to end up without a piece of property that would be generating taxes out of an item if, in fact, it goes to default, which is likely, by the way, Paul, particularly in this economic climate.
Well, this goes way back in time, but history tells us that when they were building the Washington Monument, that they had to halt construction because of whatever the economic circumstances of the time were. What was it, the war? I don't know. But the point is, it lay fallow and unfinished for years. And if they keep up this stuff and are successful, they could conceivably take all the money that's been spent there, all the time and energy and so forth, and then find out that nobody's ever going to live there when there is a frigging housing shortage. Forget about affordable housing shortage. There is a housing shortage. And for these people to go out there and do whatever they can to kill something because they don't like the way it's working is really, it's unbelievable and it's deplorable. Let's go with deplorable.
Let me jump in for a second, guys, because that project, so here's my question. When did the protests kind of begin on this? Because I do remember the vote a number of years. I mean, it's been a while ago that the council voted in favor of doing what you guys were just talking about. But it wasn't unanimous, but it did pass. But I mean, this project's been going on for a long time on Monroe Street. So when did the protests start?
But they started when it came out that they were going to allow it without affordable housing, and they were going to provide the tax credits. And the communists on the city council opposed it.
Yeah. Okay. Gotcha.
Let's slow down. Wait a minute. Hold it. Get the history correct. That site was originally to be a school for Kip Academy, correct? That site was that.
Yes.
They protested against that fiercely. This was a secondary choice for that site, correct? They wanted to grow vegetables down there. That's what they wanted to do.
Right, which is what it was. It was being significantly underutilized.
What does it say about our society if a man goes out, buys a piece of property, builds a building, and people who are outside have nothing to do with it say, yeah, unless you have certain apartments in there for four people, you can't continue on. That's totally ridiculous.
Well,
Billy. Oh, wait a minute. Billy, do you recall last week that the union folks of the General Electric wanted not to work because of the coronavirus? Is that accurate or not?
Yeah, they were concerned about safety issues, but they also wanted to make ventilators there, too. So, right?
Okay, but this is a spinoff of that same movement because those same individuals, those same union members combined together to put this protest on. You know, it wasn't a few people. There were a lot of folks, and they were in their automobiles down there clogging traffic because, they didn't want they needed social distancing, so they stayed in their cars, allegedly. But they did have a nurse. I mean, this is the part that gets me. The developer had a nurse, took all the precautions, if anybody's temperature was up, sent them home, the whole shooting gallery, and still they protested. And you're right, Paul. They didn't want to. They had an opportunity to kick an extra point, and they did. And here's the best part. I think the mayor went along with them, didn't he?
Oh, he usually does. He's afraid of all of those communists because they make a lot of noise, and he doesn't want anybody to give him a hard time. So he'll.
What about if we sympathized with him, Paul? Has anybody ever figured out that something?
Plus, he's due for re-election soon.
Well, I mean, Billy, you mentioned early on about the curfew, correct? Now, this moves right into the curfew, doesn't it?
Joe, let me stop you. Before you go to the curfew, let me just go back to Paul and you guys. Make sure you react to one other thing here. So you look at a project, and you guys were both alluding to it, that that these developers, private developers, with this economic times, I mean, they're going to be taking huge hits. Everybody is taking huge hits here. So I guess what does that mean for other projects moving forward, private projects basically in Lynn or outside of Lynn? I mean, what is that? Are we going to be set back with these projects going to be set back?
From an economic standpoint, and if you look at what Marty Walsh did in Boston, he shut down every construction project. He made them stop. The equivalent of martial law, right?
But I mean, those people with those projects will come back because they can afford to wait. Here in the city of Lynn, they're on a shoestring budget. But the fact still remains, that's why there's no building in Lynn, because people are afraid to do business here. It's not a welcome environment.
You know, it's an interesting point. An interesting point is this. Right now, we're on a thin line budgetarily, correct? Are we still under control of the state auditor, Paul?
I think so, yeah.
Yeah, so as it stands we haven't even talked about all the money we owe for borrowing $14 million with this economic climate, and if developments don't go forward, to Billy's point, the city's going to be in really tough shape, isn't it? All municipalities and states.
Right.
How are they
going to
stay on top of it?
Revenue will go way down.
Exactly.
That will lead to a decline in property values, which will further decline the real estate base.
But everybody at City Hall and in the school department and government services is still getting paid for not working.
Absolutely. That's what makes it so good to be a government worker. When stuff like this happens, you don't have to work and you still get paid. Oh, by the way, and they weren't really working even when they were working.
Hot today, Bob.
Let me just re-identify everybody, just in case they're just checking in here on the program. This is we're doing a podcast here on MSO News Sports. We've got the team from Joe Spina's Frankly Speaking Lynn TV show, Joe, Paul Crowley, and Avram Lapidus. I'm Bill Newell here, and then we're also simulcast this on Live at 5 Thursday on Lynn TV. So, Joe, you just mentioned the mayor's curfew. To me, when the mayor issued a curfew on Sunday, Easter Sunday basically is when the order went up, it tells me that they're seeing residents not abiding by the social distancing, so they felt that something needed to be done. Does that make sense?
Doesn't make sense to me at all. What makes sense, I'll tell you where we've really got a problem. And I'll use the governor of Michigan as an example. They are mandating stuff through executive orders, both at the governor's level and mayors and municipalities, that are unconstitutional. They have no powers to do this. They're not legislators. The city council, the state legislators in Commonwealth of Massachusetts and in Michigan, elsewhere, they need to pass laws for it to have constitutional muster. These folks are operating like petty autocrat dictators. And
fine and dandy, but what is the best benefit of having a curfew, especially in a city like Lynn? You're going to cut crime down considerably.
But the opposite is taking place, Avram. Crime has gone up, not the other way around. They're releasing prisoners.
Actually, I disagree with that. I believe crime has gone down substantially because everybody's just kind of backed off a little bit. You know, everybody has a job. Criminals, their job is stealing, right? They are not stealing as much. The drug dealers, they're not doing as many drug deals. I mean, everything is curtailed because the economy is curtailed, and I think that goes across the board. Now, does that lead to other types of things like domestic abuse and things like that? Maybe.
It probably does because they're talking about it now.
Right. Well, you know, that's another maybe a red herring, and I know we're going a little bit off base here, but I was reading in the Boston Globe the other day that DSS is concerned that there's much more that the issues involving children are way up even though they're way down. And what I mean by that is they're not getting the cases over the last couple of months because of the lockdown or whatever you want to call it. And the fact is they're attributing that to the fact that all their informers, the teachers and the people in the community aren't ratting out the parents. Therefore, they're not getting the cases that are actually happening. I would argue that while that may be true to some extent, that because people are part of a family more than they were before, that there's probably less of it happening. There's, you know, it's entirely possible that because of a family being together, it could actually lead to an improved relationship between all the players.
Yeah, Paul, that's all good and well. But here's the net bottom line. They're releasing prisoners. They're releasing prisoners. That means they're going to commit crimes. There's no sanctions not to commit crimes. I disagree with you. I think crimes are going to be an uptick significant, particularly...
Well, there are crimes. My wife was told that she couldn't shop in CVS yesterday because she didn't have a mask on. They told her it was the law.
Yeah, well, to that point, I just saw someone in a car driving with a mask on. Explain to me why anybody driving in a car needs a mask on.
Because if they don't put it on in their car, they'll forget to put it on when they leave the car.
Joe, did they have their windows open? I mean, I'm just following up here.
No, they had the windows closed with a mask on, driving, and you know, and it was kind of a fancy mask. I mean, it's almost fashionable now to wear masks that are made by Christian Dior or whatever. I mean, it's getting to be, and the mask doesn't protect you at all. It protects others from you, exhaling stuff.
It basically becomes a security blanket. It makes you feel okay.
But Joe, the science is not out as to whether you can reinfect yourself. So they may be thinking about that. They may have had it, and they don't want to reinfect themselves.
But the real you're
giving them too much credit, Bill.
Last week, Billy, I mentioned I was skeptical of science, and you guys jumped all over me. To this week, I'm more skeptical about scientists. I mean, let me give you someone did an analysis. The mathematical analysis of the significance of the coronavirus, and said it was negligible, and it is. In the entire world of 8 billion people plus, 100,000 are attributed to have died as a consequence of the coronavirus. Meanwhile, in the United States, deaths to pneumonia and respiratory problems are way down, and the reason why they're way down is because they're counting those deaths into the coronavirus deaths. They're skewing the figures up. And anybody that wants to deny that is blowing smoke. Paul, you're right. This is an excuse for people, for government and the elites or whatever, to take control. They got everybody scared. I mean, my daughters are driving me nuts. They want to nail me to my house. If I walk out the front door, they go paranoid.
But them and a lot of people, though, Joe. You know, man.
But at the same time, in the history of the world, there has never been anything even remotely like this. Not in even our lifetimes. So the problem is, no one really knows how to react to it. No one really knows how to handle it, and no one knows what's going to be the outcome. And the scariest thing is to have everything go back to normal, and it's really not back to normal, because as far as I'm concerned, this may be the calm before the storm.
Right.
Well, wait.
Let me let Paul weigh in here. Paul?
Yeah,
go ahead.
Yeah, so I was just, I had a conversation with one of the commissioners of my basketball league. I'm in an over 50 league, and we play, a couple nights a week and so forth. And, we obviously haven't played in quite a while now. And I just asked him, I said, when does he think that we'd be able to start playing again? And he said as soon as they come up with a cure. Which is like a year. So, in other words, I'm not going to be able to play basketball for a year, according to some people's theories on this thing.
Well, if you read the news.
And I'm going to tell you something. The guys that are out there on the court are all, closer to the at-risk age category than not. But we're all pretty healthy. That's why we're out there running around. You know, part of the reason we run around is to stay healthy, and the other part is that we're good and healthy, so we're able to run around. So, but I'm concerned that, you know, all these crazies, and when I refer to all these crazies, it's all the decision makers. It's the mayor. It's the town manager. It's the selectmen. It's the city councilors. It's the governors. It's the state reps. They're all going to say, oh, we have to be careful. It's for your own good, and they're going to do more and more of this. And, you know, being able to do something that was second nature to me for my life, all the way back till I was probably 8 years old, is now being, essentially going to be told that I can't do it anymore because I might infect somebody or get infected.
Well,
crazy.
I thought maybe we could transition. We can always bounce around and come back and forth, come back to local issues as well. But maybe we could just hit on the Massachusetts response. Now, the governor this week is saying that the surge could still be ahead here from Massachusetts and so on. So we've got our state response. Now we're doing face masks, as Joe alluded to just a moment ago. Here's one that I came across. This was in the Salem News, actually in Tuesday's Salem News, where what's essential and what's not essential. As you all know, barbershops are not essential, so barbershops are closed. However, pet daycare and pet grooming is labeled as essential. Now, there's probably a reason to that, and I'll yield to that. It just seems interesting that the pet daycare and pet grooming is essential.
So I have a great idea, because I need a haircut really bad. I'm going to go to one of those pet grooming places and ask them to cut my hair.
Just dress up as a Cocker Spaniel, Paul. There you go.
Well, they have to determine whether they're trying to argue that human-to-human contact is bad, but animals do not transmit it. That's the rationale.
That we think. We don't know. We don't know anything for sure. Okay? Everything is based on scientific data. There's no scientific data because it's all guesswork.
Once they say science, why all of a sudden does everybody bow to it? I don't understand that. Science is not God.
But people figure that they know, or they're supposed to know. And to be frank with you, how could they know? Because they don't know.
Well, that's the whole point.
And I'm sick and tired of these friggin' press conferences every single day with gloom and doom. We should shut up for a week.
Let me ask this, Billy. You know, you said there's a little stream of consciousness here, and I enjoy stream of consciousness. I'm wondering why we haven't done a profile of those who are coming down with the coronavirus badly, who are dying from it. And there is a profile. And, Paul, it's not your basketball players. They don't fit into the high-risk category. You know, we know obesity is the number one underlying condition for bad outcomes from the coronavirus. We know that, but they don't talk about that. We know that it affects certain communities far more significantly than others. For example, African Americans, black Americans, are at a much higher incident of dying from the coronavirus, and nobody asks the question why.
Well,
now, they say high blood
pressure.
Can I just
question.
Add to that? Go ahead.
In Chicago, blacks make up only 30% of the city of Chicago, and yet when it comes to the deaths from the coronavirus, they make up 70%. Now, how can one organize that? The fact of the matter is, even in Africa, where it was filled with Ebola, perhaps blacks are genetically disposed from not being able to have an immune system that can fight this.
That could be.
I don't think they're saying that. I think they're saying it's the I'm sorry, Paul. I interrupted you. Go ahead, Paul. I'm sorry.
I think it's more socioeconomic than it is anything else.
Right.
If you can say that blacks are predisposed to have this illness, you can also say blacks are predisposed to be on the lower end of the socioeconomic ladder. So it all fits. And I'm going to tell you this as well. I would say that the statistics that they're saying about blacks as it relates to impact, negative outcomes in the coronavirus are the same as the statistics that say that these people, the people that fit into this category, are also, you know, having bad outcomes without the coronavirus. I don't think this is a new phenomenon.
It's not a
phenomenon that has existed all along.
But no one's ever talked about it before. It's like a taboo topic.
And then a black man who's our Surgeon General gets on TV and talks about it in a passionate way, wanting to, you know, get the folks in the black community to understand that some of it is within their control and they can do something about it, is met by another black person who says that it triggers her and she's all of a sudden freaking out that how dare you say anything about, you know, blacks having to have these problems and have to address them. It's crazy, especially when nothing has really changed. I mean, it's just like you said, Ibram, it's just been brought to the surface. These issues are real. In the 10 years I was at Gliss, we spent all of our time trying to figure out ways to support anybody who has underlying comorbidities in a way that is helpful to them and also teaches them how to behave better so that they won't have these issues. And, you know, so it's like pass on the donut. I mean, it's real. And I'm not saying that in reference to, you know, overweight black people. I'm saying that to anybody who is overweight. You know,
let me jump in for 1 second. All said well and good, but there's a behavioral pattern. The underlying problem is that your behavior is a determinant. Would you agree with that?
Absolutely.
If you eat the wrong,
it's the most significant part of your health is your behavior.
So it's behavior, correct? All right. So why doesn't everybody do an analysis of why certain folks have behavior patterns which are counterproductive? Here's a crazy one. One of the attributable points to why so many Italians were dying of the coronavirus, one, it was males, 70% males, and secondly, because they said Italians are heavy smokers. Come to find out, scientists, by the way, came up with, they have no idea why this is true, but people who smoke are less prone to the coronavirus. Would you believe that one? So on one hand, they are attributing the devastating effects of the coronavirus from heavy smoking, and scientists are now coming out and saying, wait a second, people who smoke a lot don't seem to get it, which sounds contradictory, doesn't it? So my point being is that we have to start isolating what are the real causes. Why is it that some people are devastated from the coronavirus and others are not? And it's not just age, and it's not just underlying conditions. There are other factors, and some of it is behavioral, and a lot of it is what you eat, your lifestyle, etc. So we better start talking about that. So you're going to find, like the guy I saw driving with a mask on in a car, why he's doing that, I have no idea, because it makes no sense. But what makes sense is that he didn't stop at McDonald's or Taco Bell, you know, for breakfast, lunch, and supper. You get what I mean?
But, Joe, you said something a while ago. I just wanted to weigh in on this, is that the problem with this virus is that I do take it very seriously, is that it has impacted young people. And there are young people in our hospitals right in our area that are under the care, in the intensive care units of these hospitals, young people.
Absolutely.
Yeah. So, I mean, I think that, you know, I think that that's... That's what it, you know, takes us that's why it's so important. And the spreading, it is so contagious, and it is so contagious. But, you know, I guess the answer is going to be testing and some kind of antibody testing, and then eventually, as Paul was mentioning, the vaccine down the road, whenever we can get to that. And you know something, I'm kind of optimistic that they're going to push this forward fast, and that maybe we will be less than a year out for a vaccine. Who knows?
But let me backtrack. I mean, you said it's highly contagious. You accept that fact. I say, wait a second. out of 335 million people, 500,000 to date have contracted it. That is not contagious.
Well, here's the thing that we don't know. There are approximately 300 million people in the States. Out of all those people, if you were able to, which is impossible, test every single one, how many millions of people would have that test and be positive? Probably quite a few.
That's true, but there are no ill effects from it.
We don't
That's
know.
That's the point.
That's the whole thing. People are talking like they know, and they don't know.
Well, wait a second, Avram. If we know right now, currently, that there are 500,000 in the United States who have tested positive, right? We know that. Of that number, a little over 20,000 didn't make it. Is that correct so far?
Basically,
yes. Are these right? Okay. If you match that up against a normal flu, it's way under the annual flu deaths and contagion. So when people say it's highly contagious, by what definition? And if it is, what about the people who are asymptomatic? They're not affected by it in the least bit.
Well, I think the problem here, Joe, is that it is so deadly to certain people, and that you may be carrying it and you don't know it, is what you were just saying. And so thus, for example, senior citizens, senior residences, they're a very high at-risk population. So if you were to have a visitor, like a 20-year-old grandson or granddaughter coming in to visit you, no symptoms whatsoever, could clearly quickly pass it on. And that's how it actually probably spread into a lot of these senior centers where they are so vulnerable to this. And so, you know, yeah, we don't know how many people actually have it. That's why it's so scary, I think.
People can smoke 2 to 3 packs of cigarettes a day and live to be 90. A person can never smoke a day in their life and die of lung cancer at 30. There are certain things we do not understand, and we probably never will. But the fact remains is there is a fear going around this country that's overly blown.
The point I'm simply trying to make is we have to context this thing properly. What you said, Billy, about the elderly are subject to a high-risk pool. Well, every day that I get up, I'm in that elderly category, is a bonus. All elderly are on the brink of death. I mean, that's why we're old.
Can I take it one step further? Think about, in Massachusetts, we're like 800 and some odd deaths so far. I want to know how many people died in that same period that weren't related to this.
And I'd like to know
what is the mortality rate for people, the people who have died because of the coronavirus. What is their mortality rate without the coronavirus? And I'm going to tell you that I don't think there's any difference of any substance. There's virtually no difference in the mortality rate of people who are elderly and had a bunch of comorbidities to dying. I mean, sure, they certainly died, maybe even a violent death because of the way this all, and I get that, and that's horrible. But
well,
in
the
context,
question,
looking
well, the
back
moral
and
the question
saying,
that
hey,
comes from
minute.
This is this becoming a political debate? Is this now mixed with politics?
Of course it's not political. I mean, that's the problem with it. Tucker Carlson last night had some fellow from Tufts University, a physician from Tufts University, administer a test. You guys talked about testing to Dr. Mark Siegel, who happens to be the Fox medical contributor. And they swabbed his nose, and 15 minutes later, it came out negative. The whole point when you guys were talking about that, once you test people and they come out negative, let them go into the workforce. I mean, what we should be doing, and by the way, Avram, we can test everybody. They have the ability to do that. You can self-test, and you can do it in a moment. Once you isolate the people who are asymptomatic or who are actually sick, you can isolate them, make them better, and let the other 95% of the population go back to work and go to ball games. And that's where we're making a mistake. I mean, the irony of it all is that Ron Emanuel, remember, what was his brother's name? Ezekiel?
He said anybody over 70 shouldn't have health insurance.
75 should be dead. Should voluntarily say, see you later. Okay? I mean, that's what he was talking about. But at 74, he changed his tune. You got it? I mean, this is what kills me about people. You know,
he's on the air making all kinds of noise about a lack of a positive response because it's affecting all those people over 75, which he's basically saying we shouldn't be even helping.
Exactly. I mean, how about here's another one that gets me, like stream of consciousness. All of a sudden, I've been hearing this word transformation. Have you been hearing this word, folks, transformation? Remember that? We have to fundamentally transform America. Now, here's the linkage. This particular virus is the catalyst for that transformation. Because there are people who don't like the way America is and was. Remember someone who said, I want to fundamentally transform America? Remember someone who said that and was in the process of doing it?
Barry Sanders.
But why would you want to transform America? Is there something wrong with America that it needs transformation? It's the greatest country in the history of mankind in every category. And yet we have a guy who's laying in his basement who just hooked up with Bernie Sanders so they can transform America. Now, what is the excuse for transforming America, Paul? It's the coronavirus. Yeah,
they're going to take advantage of this. And that's the thing that really bothers me about the exit from this calamity that we've been going through. And that is that people are going to be afraid on their own. They're not, even when they're given, quote, permission to get back into the workforce, a lot of people are going to be afraid to, and it's going to
People are petrified right now.
People are not going to just all of a sudden go back to life normal. It's not going to be like that anymore. And so they've already succeeded in taking over more control of our lives because of this, the way they've handled this whole thing. The CNN and the New York Times and the Washington Post and MSNBC have very effective, and Fox News, by the way, have very effectively scared the bejesus out of everybody.
Well, let me just point out again that we're here on MSONewsSports.com and also on Lynn TV, Lynn Community TV, with a Frankly Speaking crew, Joe Spina's team here, as well as Paul Crowley and Avram Lapidus. I'm Bill Newell here from MSO News Sports, and the program usually airs live on Lynn TV at 5 o'clock, but of course, due to social distancing, that's not happening. By the way, none of us are doctors. I just thought we'd point that out to the listeners here.
Speak for yourself. By the way, neither are most of the politicians.
No.
And, McGee's not a doctor, neither is Charlie Baker. But, so give me a break.
Well, no, but they have medical advice. Yeah. Hey, let me jump to something else. Let me jump to something else here. So, again, we're recording this on Tuesday. So, Monday afternoon, let me just jump to a couple things here. Let me throw a couple things out there now in our final coming down to home stretch here. We still have plenty of time, though. But, you talk about people criticizing the models that were out there. And, you know, they say, oh, there's 200,000 people are going to die, 300,000, 150,000, and now it's going to be less than 60,000. And people are criticizing the models. Well, You know, I don't see why people need to criticize the models. It's the good news that it's less than what they thought, and we're social distancing, and I think that's making a difference. I mean, it has to be making a huge difference because we just uprooted and stopped the entire country, and so on. Let me just throw that one out there. The other piece here is these presidential news conferences. I think it's only fair to point out that they're too long. You know, they're way too long.
Yes, absolutely, absolutely. And there's too many people speaking.
Well, you know, no, there's one person speaking too much. And, and I'm not beating up on the president, but he's out there way, way too much. Having said that, though, the reviews from the Monday presidential briefing are incredible because it was an incredible briefing in the sense that he just took on CNN, MSNBC, The New York Times, The Washington Post, just took them to pieces. And, you know, this blame game here to me is who was on it first, who was on it last. It you know, somebody mentioned, is this politics? Well, apparently it is all politics. And why can't we just stick to, why can't we stick to the issues? That really the should be is that, you know, the president should have a few updates, the vice president should have a few updates. Then we should be hearing from Dr. Birx and Dr. Fauci and the people that are logistically moving things around the country. You know, I think we've responded pretty well to this, you know, as a state, as cities. And, you know, we're doing what we can with the information that we have. But the idea here is that this information changed and it's changed quickly. And, you know, I'll be honest with you. There's somebody that I know that was very scared about this months ago. And I honestly thought he was a little overreactive to it. Turns out he's probably about right, you know. And so, you know, everybody got this wrong, basically, to some level.
Yeah, well, I'm going to take issue with the model. The model came from the University of Washington. Yeah. And it's Washington, if I'm not mistaken. Bill Gates is in Seattle, is he not?
Yeah.
Okay, and that's not coincidental. And, by the way, Fauci and Birx, aren't they on the board, on his board? On Gates' board?
For sure.
I know, and so is Fauci. I mean, Fauci had to walk back what he said. I mean, Fauci is as late as late February. Said, no big deal. Coronavirus is no big deal. He said that, Paul. He said
right.
that, Bill.
No, he said.
And the media turned around and distorted it. And that's why you had that press conference on Monday the way it was. Because, in fact, CNN, MSNBC, the New York Times, the Washington Post, and everybody you mentioned distorted the story intentionally.
No, Joe, I'm with you on that piece. I'm with you on that piece because what Fauci was asked on a weekend show was, if you intervened earlier, mitigated earlier, would you have saved lives? Hypothetical question. You know, way beyond his advice to the press, excuse me, to the president, way beyond the knowledge of the CNN and MSNBC experts, and way beyond the expertise of the WHO. Got a little tickle in my throat here. But so it's a hypothetical. And I knew as soon as he said that, that it was going to be, you know, taken out of context, which of course it was.
So why did you know that? But Billy, why did you know that? Why did your alarm go off?
Because anything that Trump does is going to be criticized.
Exactly.
Right.
Exactly.
Right.
Go ahead, Paul. I'm sorry.
I'm going to argue that the Democrats and all those media outlets that we've been talking about for the last 10 minutes or so are the collective group that invented Donald Trump or created Donald Trump. They created him by getting people fed up with the way the Democrats were running things, the way the media, you know, obscures things and makes everybody look good if they like you and everybody look bad if they don't and all that type of stuff. They actually created Donald Trump, and now they're trying to tear him down. And Donald Trump is basically the best counterpuncher I have ever seen. He basically says, look, this is no longer we're going to play fair here. I am going to expose you every time that you do these things. And that, you know, that whole video that he did yesterday was, you know, to me it was certainly an ideal, you know, campaign video or whatever. At the same time, there was nothing fallacious about it. It was all true stuff that he was just pointing out so that people who were watching, and by the way, CNN and MSNBC shut it off as soon as they saw it coming on, because they don't want anybody, any of their people to know what's going on. They want to be able to control the narrative.
Let me just weigh in, and then I'll let you guys sound off, but just because to respond directly to Paul is that, yeah, I mean, I think I'm an equal opportunity critic, but I'm also someone that gives – I mean, I don't look at people negatively. I don't assume they have terrible motives, but it's interesting that The videos that Trump was showing Monday were videos of CNN and MSNBC, and CNN called it propaganda. So that's interesting. But the other thing, too, is if you want to criticize Trump fairly, I think you could say give him credit for shutting the borders down in January. But he did downplay it for a while, you know, that and so they were on him for that. But, you know, he did have a kind of a cavalier. He did have a kind of a cavalier approach to this. But so did a lot of other people at the time.
Right.
And that, I mean, how about everybody?
According to Donald Trump, not because he's Donald Trump, but because he's the president, he is the one to make the final decision when things can open up again and get back to normal. Now, that's a huge sense of responsibility. Now, when we do go back to normal, are we ever going to go back to normal? Probably not. That's the major tragedy that will be talked about for years after this is really settled and the dust clears, okay? They have placed such a fear in this country that everybody is scared to talk to their next-door neighbor.
Well, I must tell you, the word getting back to normal, nothing ever gets back to normal.
Well,
it's
right.
Always moving forward. Right. So, you know, we'll adjust and adapt, and that's going to happen. The question is what happens to our civil liberties? That's my main concern. What happens to my freedom of choice? What happens to being able to express an opinion without being vilified? There was an article this individual who spent the last 10 years of his life because he wanted to go in academia in biology, and he was he finally got a PhD, was teaching down at Penn State, and he left completely and utterly disillusioned, and he was fairly liberal in all of his views, apparently, except for one. He said that gender is determined at birth and it's binary. That was unacceptable. And he became blackballed in his community and left accordingly. That's where we're at. I mean, people are pitted, and if you deviate from the norm, if you say, like I say, that I don't particularly trust science, I'm anathema. Oh, are you? What? You're a Neanderthal. I mean, give me a break. And if you talk about the fact, Billy, you know, you come up with a wonderful story about young people dying from the coronavirus. They do. But that number, in the abstract, is insignificant. It makes great headlines, it's like, I can't watch Bambi. Every time I see Bambi, I break down and cry. I can't help myself. It's emotional. And this is what they're doing. The media is pushing forward emotional stories specifically to get you to, which is more powerful than intellect, so that you are, in fact, fearful. You remember Orson Welles with when he did that broadcast of 38 before he was born?
Yeah, War of the Worlds, yeah.
But hear me out for a second. How do you control a large body of people? You put the fear of God into them. When you put the fear of God into them, then you can control
them. Emotional, Avram. That's an emotional response, correct?
Absolutely.
It's not irrational. I mean, to this day, people are fearful of Martians invading. To this day. That was the 1938 War of the Worlds.
Well, Joe, wait a minute. You're not afraid of a possible Martian invasion?
Not today.
Let's get to one thing also. During the Great Depression, unemployment was at a level of over 20%. Now it's at 10%. Those are the things that people should be talking about simply because we have ruined a lot of people's lives from this fear.
No, we didn't do it. We didn't do it. It was done intentionally. That's my argument. I don't think this is a cosmic accident. I don't think that this was a happening like a tornado or an act of God. This is by design.
Yeah.
It is, you know, the upper class that controls, whatever you want to call them, the deep state, you know, the Illuminati, globalists, they're fine. They're going to profit from this. And the lower class, there's no problem, they're going to get fed. It's the middle class that got wiped out. It's getting wiped out.
Well,
and that's by design, yeah. Because they're the threat. They're the threat.
Class. This was the only country in the world that had a middle class. The wealthy people don't care. because they got it, and the poor people figure it's impossible. But it's the ones in the middle who have had the taste of both lives want more. That's what drove America to greatness.
And they're the ones that got killed by this, by the shutdown, the lockdown.
We are practically, I don't think in this country, to be frank with you, there is any more middle class.
Well, it's being destroyed by design.
It's,
you know, someone wrote about, Thomas Mann wrote about this in a book called Buddenbrooks way back when. You got to wipe out the bourgeois, the bourgeoisie. Isn't that exactly what the Communist Manifesto is all about, getting rid of the bourgeoisie and the middle class? That's the transformation.
Right. And then there's the rules for radicals where when you have a crisis, you destroy from within.
Yeah, exactly. But the big lie, you know, globalist. Whoever tells the biggest lie is the winner.
Well, you know, here's how I see this is that, you know, I think the virus is for real. I think, however, are people capitalizing on the virus that want to do kind of the things that you're talking about, Joe, that don't want to miss out, as Ron Emanuel said, on a crisis to try to transform? Yeah, absolutely. I mean, it seems like they're using it to beat up on Trump, and that's fine. You know, they can do that, I guess. But I still think that there's some science here that this is a real problem. Here's an example. Black pastor down in Virginia defied the order several weeks ago and held church services. Today, he's passed away due to the coronavirus. He packed his church. He defied the isolation orders, and now he's not alive. Now, how did that work out for him?
Not too well.
Not too well at all. Okay, really, truly, and his parishioners are probably mad as hell that they went there in the first place.
Well, I mean, these are the views that are, I mean, you have extreme views on each side here, and again, I don't think everyone's acting. I don't think the mayor of Lynn is acting on a bad motive. I don't think the governor is acting on bad motive, or the president when he orders 30 days of isolation or whatever. But. But here's the thing that bothers me. You know, you look at that press conference, all these press conferences, like, I would never treat a president of the United States the way some of these reporters treat Trump. I mean, what kind of human being treats somebody with these snarky questions? Ask the real questions, but, you know, play a gotcha question or whatever, but can you lose the attitude at this time?
Right. And that's it. They are so bent on making him look bad. And the interesting thing is, I'm looking at the expression on some of their faces when he pushes right back. Like he said to the woman, I think it was yesterday, or maybe it was the day before, he said, you're the last person I'm going to tell when I decide what I'm going to do. And, you know, her face just went gaunt, you know, and good for him. I mean, and she deserves everything she's getting because her approach is not to help to better understand and inform the public. It's to hurt Trump any way she can.
We've been like this now for about, what, 6 weeks? I think it's been about 6 weeks since we've really taken this very seriously.
Well, it feels like 6 weeks. I don't know if it's been quite that long, though, but yeah.
No, it's close, but the thing is, how much longer can we go on like this?
No.
I want to come from left field as usual. I noted that recently there's been some critique over the fact that I had thought that hugging, kissing, and touching a woman without her consent, that the Me Too people would go bonkers. But apparently the New York Times says it's okay if your name is Joe Biden. Do you remember that?
That's not coming from left field. That's coming from right field.
Okay. So, and I'm wondering that woman who is now pushing back even harder on her complaint about Joe Biden. And I'm wondering whether this is a concerted effort to undermine Joe Biden by those in the Democratic establishment to see him as an utter loser and to try to elevate Cuomo, and that's the way to do it. The way to get rid of Joe Biden is to start pushing the story about his improprieties with women. What do you guys think of that theory?
To be frank with you, as far as I'm concerned, it's over and done with. There'll be no Democratic convention as we know about it, and Joe Biden will get the nomination like I told you back almost a year ago, and you owe me bagels from Katz's Bagels.
I don't think it's necessarily in stone. That's my point.
But Joe, I would say, I would agree with you that that would be a possibility, except for the New York Times covered it up. So if they were out promoting the story, then I'd say, yeah, you're onto something there. But as of right now, the worm hasn't turned on that one.
But the fact that the New York Times tried to bury that story, in fact, made the story come back again, because people are saying, wait a second. And now she's pushing back harder. And that would be picked up. And it will start, if the powers to be, don't forget, all of the media is controlled by six corporations. And if those folks in those six corporations decide that Joe Biden can't do it, can't cut the mustard, how are you going to get rid of them? They got rid of, Bernie Sanders is gone. And Joe Biden is talking left field type of stuff like the transformation of America. What if they've decided that he can't win and they're taking a look at Cuomo as possibly a guy that could beat Trump? And they have to get rid of Joe Biden. The only way they get rid of Joe Biden is to Kavanaugh him, right, or Burke him by innuendo.
But none of these stories are taking center stage because we're too involved with the virus right now. And as long as the virus continues on, nothing is ever going to take center stage, okay? Because I'll tell you the truth. As far as I'm concerned, I'm telling you, we're going to be talking about this and still be in the minute by the end of August.
If that's true, then Trump is reelected overwhelmingly.
Well, no question, but the point of the matter is, my friend who runs the laboratory at Brigham and Women's Hospital that does all the research on these things said to me, this is going to go on until at least August, and it'll probably take a year till they have a vaccine. But you go to get a flu shot, you'll get a coronavirus shot. This is not going to go away tomorrow.
We are down to probably our last minute or so. So, Paul, let me have you to weigh in with maybe your final thought. I guess we lost.
Are you here?
All right, we lost.
Did we lose Paul?
Okay, we must have lost Paul for some reason. But gentlemen, so let me just say we.
On mute, guys.
Oh, there you go, Paul. I'm sorry. So if you wanted to weigh in, we're basically our last minute here. If you want to weigh in with a final thought.
Yeah. So I think everybody needs to just take a step back and relax about all this stuff. And if we as a society can, and I don't mean the politicians, I mean just the people in the community. We need to think about this in a reasonable and rational way. And if we do that, I think that we can slowly come out of this in a way that allows us to get back to some level, sense of normalcy. If we react to whether it's Fox or MSNBC or CNN or the headlines that are designed to make Trump look bad and so forth, All we're going to do is let them win the argument and live a life of chaos that's self-inflicted.
Gotcha.
I'll leave it at that.
All right. I'm going to I guess we're just about out of time here. But again, this to let people know again, this is on msonewsports.com. I'm Bill Newell. We're kind of over the top here on our website, but this is also going to be at 5 on Thursdays on Lynn Community TV with the Frankly Speaking moniker, if you will, with the host Joe Spina, Paul Crowley, and Avrin Lapidus, who you've all just heard for this past hour or so. So again, gentlemen, thanks so much for joining us. Again, Joe Spina, Paul Crowley, Avrin Lapidus, I'm Bill Newell here on msonewsports.com and Frankly Speaking on Lynn Community TV.